Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 24 of season 2. For some folks who live in urban regions, the closest they come to a site of food production can be the farmers' markets that populate the fringes of many cities. There they can see crops in the ground, watch the goats darting around with each other, pick a ripe strawberry, maybe even marvel at a pumpkin being shot out of a catapult. These markets are little sites of education and wonder, slowly spreading the message of where our food comes from. Today, we head to one such market.
It's not a 9-to-5. You don't necessarily get a day off during harvest season. It's steady go, and that's not for everyone. You start small and kind of get bigger, then you build off of what you know you can handle and what you can do and support. In this business, I think you have to kind of be open to criticism, and a lot of times it helps you be better. So just being open to constantly evolving. I think Newfoundland's going in the right direction in the sense of the support from the government and those programmings, but it's hard.
For some in our province's capital city, the market that has opened their eyes to food production is Lester's Farm Market, right there on Brookfield Road, where the food-consuming city shades into the food-producing countryside. I met up with Susan Lester, a sixth-generation farmer, early one morning at the beginning of Thanksgiving week in 2021. This is one of the busiest weeks of the year for a farm market, but she still took the time out to chat. Oh, and she'd just been married a few weeks earlier in the greenhouse we used for the interview. Indeed, there were still a few greeneries around from that event. I started out by asking her if there was a point where she realized she was also going to be a farmer in her family's tradition.
So it was always in my mind to be a farmer. After growing up, I seen my parents and my two brothers kind of transition into it. Got to see many aunts and uncles and cousins also farm. But when I was younger, junior high, high school, even first bit of university, I guess I was a bit ignorant as to how much time and planning and energy and effort was going to take up. When I was growing up, I was going to be a teacher, a dance teacher, a farmer, a list of five or six other things all at once. So I've always kind of done more than one thing at a time. So I just assumed I could do that. But being in here now full time, it would be impossible to do it. And as much as I love other things like teaching and dancing, this is where my heart is, and this kind of encompasses everything that I love to do, and that's really important.
And this remains a family business because you have siblings who are also involved in the business?
Yep. So there's myself, my mom, Mary, who managed the market, my dad, John, who kind of does the greenhouse and is kind of stepping away from the fields a little bit, and then my two brothers, Brad and Chris, who do the fields and all that other stuff out there.
You're very close to a large urban area, the largest in Newfoundland Labrador. What are some very positive things about that, and are there some downsides occasionally about having so many people so close?
Yep. So being a direct sales market, it's really important to have a customer base around us. So that has made a huge impact, and we're after seeing it grow up around us. So over this way, you can see the new road. Kilbride has grown up a lot too. So it certainly has a good customer reach where we're too. We're kind of central. The cities have kind of grown up around us. And then as for downsides, the way that we've structured our business means that people are on our farm at all times, but we're a fully working farm. So we have to make sure that we are taking extra precautionary measures. So fencing things in that customers can go visit to, making sure that when we're in a greenhouse, even though plants need to get watered and ventilated, that it's safe for people to come in and actually visit. So it's a great way for us to also educate people about why things are the way they are.
Do you see the lights going on when people are here sometimes? Like they say, I didn't realize tomatoes grew on vine, or whatever it is. Do you hear that or see that happening with people coming?
Yep, definitely. And one of the things that I guess my mom started with, because my mom is kind of the mastermind behind the direct sales and customer service, everything that we do here, one of the main values that she wanted to have was that we really make sure we're reaching out to the customers and educating them about why we do what we do. Back in the 90s, the local food movement was not as big as it is today. And we still have some more room to grow. Like everyone could still be supporting more and learning more about farming in Newfoundland, I think. But she wanted to make sure that we were educating people of all ages, right from kids to adults, about why we do what we do. So yeah, there's many times that people come in, and whether it be a weird veggie, and I say weird as in like, you know, a different color carrot or a beet, wow, that's cool. Or growing things like artichoke, people being like, I didn't realize you could grow it here. We also do school tours and a kids program called Little Lester's here. And it's amazing to see those aha moments, I guess, of okay, this is a seed they planted, they come back next week and oh my God, this is how it works. Or they're going to pick strawberries and, oh, but there's green ones. And then you tell them how they change with the sun and, oh my goodness. And they go home and you hear them tell their parents. And it's great to have those. Yeah. It's very humbling. I guess sometimes being a farmer, you take for granted things that you get to see and do every day, not realizing that there's a lot of people out there who don't see this every day. So it's great to see those people enjoy what we get to do all the time.
Are there certain questions that you get asked over and over?
Back, for instance, when we started the strawberry you pick, I think it was 2002, a lot of people would be like, well, why can't I get strawberries in May? You know, they're in the grocery stores. People are still comparing us to grocery stores, and it's like, okay, but we have frost until Father's Day, and we've had frost already in September, so really short growing season. It's not necessarily questions, but it's just changing the way people are thinking about their food and realizing what goes into it. And a lot of that is just getting out to a local farm, whether it's ours, of course we'd love to see you, but anyone in general, and just speaking to them about, okay, I'm looking for this, so, but why isn't it available? But we can certainly tell you about what's going on in our fields and why this is small this week and next week it's huge, or why a bunch of carrots is more expensive because it's pulled by hand versus by machine. There's a lot of details that go into farming, I think.
It's interesting that you pick is sort of a moment where the consumer is actually participating in the agriculture in a way.
Not only does it taste better when you actually put the work in to do it, and you know, you get to show everyone these are what I picked, but then they realize too, okay, they don't grow in containers. They do have to get hand-picked, and you know, it's a sunny, beautiful day for lounging, but when you're bent over picking berries, it's quite different. And then on the flip side of that too, when we have our U-pick closed because of the weather, we're still out picking. So, you know, okay, great, I can still get berries today, but that means someone had to pick them in this cold, drizzly weather that we usually get in July. Anyways, even just to get out and enjoy the farm with the family, it's great to see people enjoying their food and where it comes from, and also realizing that there's lots of good food being produced here in Newfoundland, and it's safe.
You mentioned earlier the local food movement, and certainly there's been a real explosion, I suppose, of interest. You're being aware of where your food comes from. I mean, how do you see that consumer movement intersect with the commercial farmers?
That's a really good question. So, as I mentioned, we do also have a greenhouse season here. So we have not only the decorative annuals and perennials, but we do also have veggie transplants and herb transplants. When COVID hit, this is one of the plus sides of COVID, I think. I think everyone had to take a step back and realize that, you know what, there's probably things that you could enjoy right here in your backyard. Things like gardening, things like growing your own things, whether it be a few heads of lettuce, something that they never had a chance to do before because they were always too busy. So we've seen a huge jump in those kind of customers wondering about how to grow their own and what grows well with what. And then the past 2 years, or past two greenhouse seasons anyways, there's been a lot of people saying, okay, I've never done anything before, but I'm home with the kids, I want to do something, what can we do? So it's great for us because then it's making sure that we're getting out some information to people, we're sharing what works for us, and of course there's so many different ways of farming. And then it's always good to have that connection with those customers. I feel like that's a further connection. So not only can they get their fresh veggies here, but they can also get their info here from us. So we do gardening classes, we're always here with our staff. Our staff, I'm really proud of our staff. It's a lot of students and a lot of like young adults. Now there are some mature adults too, but they all take great pride in here. Most of them actually have never been on a farm growing up other than here. This was their farm as a kid, and now they're here and they're getting to share that experience and have other families have that experience they did as a kid.
Do you have a piece of music that you think I could use for this underneath somewhere? A favorite piece of music of some sort? You're looking at me
again with
the
favorites. Oh man.
Hard to narrow it down, I guess.
It is hard to narrow it down. I generally don't like picking favorites because then I leave out other things.
So I could bug you later.
Yeah, I'll see if I can think of anything.
Let me go. dark. Girl, I've never loved one like you.
That was Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros with their song Home. Susan Lester, my guest today, suggested this track for use on the show. Since we were chatting in a greenhouse, I started this section by asking her how many of these structures they operate.
So here on this property, we have 17 greenhouses. And then last year, we purchased another greenhouse operation with another 20 greenhouses. So luckily, we have a good amount of covered space. So that's how we grow our tomatoes and our cucumbers, eggplant, and a lot of our herbs, too.
Yeah. No problems with wind damage?
They hold up pretty well. As you'll notice, we do have extra supports put in. Mm-hmm. So normally, you'd only have half of the supports. But because of the constant winds around here, we double up. Yeah. And that helps a lot. But yeah, sometimes the plastic does get a beating. Usually in other greenhouse productions, the sun does more damage to the plastic.
Does it degrade the plastic so that it starts to rip easier?
Over time. Yeah, usually, now I'm talking about places like on the mainland where it's much sunnier, but for us, it's the wear and tear from the constant moving of the wind.
Are there things that you did during COVID that you'll continue to do? Is it something that was a learning experience?
Yeah, as annoying as COVID is and was and, you know, so many unknowns, I think it really did help us move forward. So there was a lot of things that we had on the back burner for a number of years that because of COVID, we said, okay, we got to get this done now. It will make things easier. It'll be better for our customers and our staff. Things like getting more greenhouses, purchasing 20 other greenhouses in the midst of a pandemic. We didn't really know what we were going to get into or get out of it, but we're glad we did. We expanded our market this past spring. And now we look at it and we said, how did we do it before? So it just provides more space for the customers, more space for the product, and it just helps us have a nice flow for everyone to feel safe when they're here. We create an online store for online shopping. There's some people who are more comfortable than others, just a great way for people to still support local and get their things without having to come in. I think COVID, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that it's impacted negatively, but for us, I think that it has had an overall positive experience. Yeah. It's also a great way for people to come. Farming is very therapeutic anyways. I find it is anyways, farming and gardening. So it's a great break from the reality sometimes for families to come out and enjoy the farm. And I think that now it's kind of a nice, safe getaway for people too.
Do you think that people will continue doing the gardening that they picked up during COVID?
I hope so. And we always tell people, don't get discouraged. Yeah. There's going to be something that fails, and that's okay.
Even here, you've had failures?
Yes.
Failures?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yes. So many. So many. But yeah, I really hope that people do stick with it. I know that it takes a lot of time and money and patience. When you're farming and gardening, you're just constantly learning because something that works 1 year doesn't work the next year.
So as
soon as you think you got ahead of the game and you've done everything, there's another something else you got to worry about, another new bug or different weather or something of that sort.
What's your idea about how we entice more people into agriculture and maybe sort of harness some of this passion that sometimes people have for growing local food? Do you have any ideas about what we are doing and what we can do?
You know, there's a lot of programming out there now, which is great to help new entrants. And I mean, the Young Farmers Board, Matthew Carlson, is fantastic. He has so much information at his fingertips that he is always willing to share and kind of help people get on the right path. I think Newfoundland's going in the right direction in the sense of the support from the government and those programmings. But it's hard. I'm lucky that I have a family that has been into it for years. But we still have our battles. I mean, we're still trying to constantly get new land. There's always something more efficient that you want to have because, of course, with farming and any greenhouse production, the cost of your inputs, it's going down, are they? No, no. If anything, we've been told that they're just going to constantly go up from all of our suppliers because of the demand, right? There's lots of opportunity here. I think a lot of people, when they get started and, you know, okay, I'm going to do this, they almost bite off too much. We started small. In the 80s, they were just doing wholesale. they, as in my family, sorry, were just doing wholesale. So they were doing potato, carrot, cabbage, turnip, broccoli, and romaine. They were doing six crops. That was it. Each year, they kept adding on and expanding, and I think that's what people need to kind of set their mindset to, because it's really easy to sink a bunch of time, effort, and money into something, get discouraged, and then walk away from it. But if you start small and kind of get bigger, then you build off of what you know you can handle and what you can do and support.
You grow a fair number of crops here. I don't know how many it would be, but you also have, as you say, 90 people who work here peak season as well.
So we have about 100 different varieties of fruits and veggies, but now that's, you know, a few different kinds of varieties of lettuce and potatoes, right? You need to have good people around you and good workers around you. So we've really locked into a lot of people. We do have foreign workers come in from Jamaica. Some of them have been with us since 2013, and they're out in all sorts of weather. They don't stop. Anyone that works here and it comes back year to year, you speak wonders about their work ethic, like anyone on a farm anywhere, right?
Yeah. Would they immigrate here if they could, if that was possible?
Yeah, actually, we have one guy here now who he married a Newfoundlander at one point, and now he's here. Yeah, him and his son are here, and we do have a few others now that they're on like a seasonal program, so they have to go home each year for a set number of months, but we're hoping to maybe go on to another program that maybe we could have a 2-year, and then in that case then they can bring their families up. I think they like it here. They like the snow.
I always like the snow too. But
me too. Me too.
I think we're outliers.
Yeah, I think so. They do enjoy their time here. The few times that I've traveled to Jamaica before COVID, I feel like we're very similar people. Very friendly.
Yeah. Island people.
Yes, exactly. Got to be something about the islands. Yeah, so I think this is their home away from home, and this is kind of their second family away from home. Yeah, everyone here is pretty close-knit too, so you know, we try to celebrate birthdays when we can, and those big milestones that they may miss from home, we try to do that here for them too.
So do you have certain weeks during the year where you have scads of people? Would Thanksgiving be one of those weeks when everybody wants a pumpkin?
Yeah, so Thanksgiving is probably one of our busiest vegetable time, which is great because right now, although some crops are finished up like peas and beans, it's really peak season in there now. So aside from the regular Thanksgiving dinner veggies, we still have things like lettuce, and we still have things like corn and cauliflower and broccoli. So it's a great way for people to come in and enjoy fresh vegetables that we picked just this morning for them. Aside from the veggies, this is really big pumpkin time from us. So there's a few pumpkins out around now, and as you hear the tractors going back and forth this morning, they're restocking from yesterday. On the weekends in October, we have our annual fundraiser called Pumpkin Fest. So this is our 20th year doing so, and it's a great way for us to come together as a community and give back to the programs. And on Pumpkin Fest days, we have the Cormets, wagon rides, barrel train, petting burn, giant slide. We had a few other games out there yesterday. We had a corn boil for people to have it. Yeah, it was just a great way of getting people out to the farm.
Do you have a pumpkin cannon?
We don't have a cannon.
That's okay.
But we do have a pumpkin catapult.
Oh, catapult. Okay.
Yeah, or trebuchet, I guess. My dad gets a little more technical. So we haven't fired it off yet, but within the coming weeks, we will be firing off a few pumpkins.
It became a thing a while back. Now with a pumpkin cannon.
Yeah. The catapult is usually a pretty big hit, and my dad takes great pride into it. That's something that he's put together after watching many videos and reading many books.
Oh, you can learn that on YouTube.
Oh, yes. Yes, you can. Yep.
Let me come home.
By request of my guest, that was Home by Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. I'm speaking with Susan Lester of Lester's Farm Market, just outside St. John's. We start out this last section by talking about the next generation of farmers.
Are you optimistic about the next generations of Lester's and other families, that they will be able to still farm in Newfoundland and Labrador?
I hope so, but unfortunately there's many family farms that are around here in Newfoundland that there is no next generation, or there was no next generation, and then you're after seeing a lot of family farms close up. And I think it's because, you know, you grow up and you see your family putting all the hard work into it, and there's definitely a lot of tough years, and it's not a 9-to-5. You don't necessarily get a day off during harvest season. And it's steady go, and that's not for everyone. And it's really important for people to come to that realization too, because you don't get to dip your toe in when it's your lifestyle. You have to go full dive into it. For us, my brother Chris and his wife Karen have this adorable kid, and we're trying to train her in all the time. She's already been packaging carrots. She picks strawberries, and we're just trying to raise her the way that our parents raised us, as in the farm is always here if you want it. You're not pressured to go into this lifestyle. You want this as a summer job, great. If you have a certain interest, let's see if we can make it happen here. And I think that helped myself and my brothers return to the farm, because we were able to see if this is actually what we wanted to do. And then this way we know that, yes, this is where we want to be. This is where it feels right. Our parents were phenomenal. You know, if you guys want it, it's here. If not, we'll figure something out. And our dairy farm family that's just across the driveway there, there are definitely some grandkids over there. So they would also be the seventh generation that spend many afternoons and weekends on the farm, and they're definitely interested into it. So we're trying to expose them all to as much of the farm as we can, in hopes that, you know, we start planting the seed that they grow that interest themselves.
You have a background in dance, as you said. You taught dance. Is there a chance of doing dance lessons on the farm? Is that one of the programs that's going to develop in the pumpkin field?
Who knows?
The pumpkin dance.
The opportunities are endless. Who knows? Now, when I have my kids program here, a little Lester, so I have also tied in my education program into that there. We do a farm dance game. So unofficially, officially, we do some dance moves here, like milking the cow, picking strawberries, lots of different things like that.
I can see the tour of the Arts and Culture Center is where, you know, the farm dances. What's your favorite local food?
My favorite local food. Oh my, where do we start? That's a really tricky question, because it's a very loaded question. I really love our carrots and our strawberries. I can't eat carrots and strawberries unless it's ours. Other local food, I mean, there's so many local restaurants around town that are doing phenomenal with their local connections. So I really like what they're doing. Ross and Celeste, they do weird things, but it works. So by weird things, I mean, you take a parsnip and they're making sorbets out of it, or they're making these soups that taste like you're eating sugar. Like, there's so many chefs out there that are doing phenomenal. You have Chinch that are making sausages out of beet. It's very innovative. It's great to see all of these people who are, they're just constantly trying to think of new ways to make it unique. And I think that all of those local restaurants, Mallard's, Tear, everywhere, they're just doing such a great job.
So you don't have to just take a beet and boil the life out of it.
No, exactly. That's what I like. I mean, we grew up, Mom obviously still cooks us dinner. We're spoiled when it comes to that. We have a family dinner and meeting every day at lunch. But
really, every day at lunch, you meet together, you eat, you eat together.
We do. We eat and we meet together. That's really the only time that we can kind of catch up and see what's going on. And then just to finally catch up with each other, say, you know, how's Eva doing today? What's new in school? That kind of thing.
And you have to have food, because nothing good ever happens without food, right?
We do get hangry if we don't have food. So it's a great way to keep in touch, because it's so busy. It's essential for our business. It doesn't always have to happen for a farm, but for us it was essential.
You're very well established here. I'm just curious how you keep in touch with your customers. Have you needed to use social media a lot, or what works for you?
So when we first started off with the direct market sales, word of mouth did us wonders, and it still does. But I think what travels faster now is social media. So I take care of the Facebook and Instagram and Twitter pages. It's also a really great way for customers to reach out with questions. Okay, I'm growing this. This is happening. What can I do? I brought this home. Don't know what it is. Something like purple carrots, for instance. Do you have any suggestions on how I can enjoy it? So it does get quite busy here. And although we're always here and there's always staff here, it's hard to see every single person's experience. But by tagging us or sharing it with us, it's a great way to see how they enjoyed our farm. On those busy days, you open up the messages and you see that, and it's like, yep, this is why we do what we do. Yeah. It definitely takes up a few hours each day, but it is worth it. Yeah. You got to have the right person to do it. Yeah. With my background in not only education, but an English degree as well. So writing is my passion. So it's great to do up daily posts.
Kind you do of a daily post?
Pretty every
much
day.
Try to feed it every day.
We do. So basically from beginning of May when we reopen full time, right up until December 23rd, I'll be doing a daily post. Just because, number one, the algorithms on Facebook and Instagram, they sometimes will hide you. You have to stay relevant. And in order to do that around here, I think that it's best to do a daily post. And there's so much going on too. Yeah, social media is fantastic for reaching out to people. Unfortunately, it does also bring on the keyboard warrior sometimes.
Yeah.
But again, we just try to take that opportunity because sometimes, for the most part, it's a misunderstanding or a miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
So reaching out to those people and having a conversation with them, no, it's not always easy. And yeah, sometimes it does take a lot out of you mentally to be able to reach out and chat to those people. But I think long term, it's a great way to inform, re-educate, and just explain.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, a lot of the questions we get are about organics and not, and we're not organic. So I reach out to them and explain, this is the list of things that we do to prevent the common bugs through IPM. And, you know, a lot of people said, okay, great. Like, I didn't realize that this was such a thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with social media and everything at your fingertips on your phone, it's easy to find information on anything and everything. But it doesn't always mean that it's the right thing. And not saying that we do everything right all the time either, but here's why we're doing what we're doing. And then that way, you know, a conversation goes a long way. We're coming from a province that we're about, what, 3, maybe even 4 generations removed from the farm. So a lot of this stuff isn't commonly known. So it's up to us as farmers, no matter how big or small you are, to explain to your consumer or your neighbors or whoever what's going on so that it's transparent.
Yeah. And you realize that located where you are, where almost half the province's population live, you're the example of what agriculture is for most of them. They may see other farms, but they don't visit them, you know? So not to put pressure on you.
Well, we hope that we're showing a good example. In this business, I think you have to kind of be open to criticism, and a lot of times it helps you be better people, better business. So just being open to constantly evolving what you're doing.
Susan, you're very busy. I'm sorry to take time up, but thanks so much for chatting with us.
Yes, well, thank you so much. It was great. Always lovely to sit down and have a chat about what's going on the farm.
Excellent. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
If you want to follow Susan's posts about their market, look her up on Lester's Farm Market on Facebook or Instagram, or check out her Twitter feed, which is at @LFM_Susan.
We really make sure we're reaching out to the customers and educating them about why we do what we do. We've seen a huge jump in customers wondering about how to grow their own and what grows well with what. It's great to see people enjoying their food and where it comes from, and also realizing that there's lots of good food being produced here in Newfoundland, and it's safe. There was a lot of things that we had on the back burner for a number of years that, because of COVID, we said, okay, we gotta get this done now.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was the very catchy earworm Home by Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, as requested by my guest. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by the K Brothers. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
My favorite local food. Oh my, where do we start?